Good morning and welcome to another edition of the Snow Nose Garden Show. I'm Corbin Snow.
And I'm Norm Carlson.
We're here for the next hour to take your gardening questions and answer your phone calls. Our number here live in the WINA studios is 977-1070. If you have any questions about gardening, plants, trees, shrubs, perennials, annuals, lawn, your house plants, pests, rodents, insects, disease, weeds, or something just looks funny out there in the garden, give us a call, 977-1070. We'd be happy to take your questions and answer your phone calls, and the phone lines are wide open at 977-1070. And the weeds, man, they are going berserk, aren't they?
They really are.
Oh, my gosh. It's like, the reason why everyone, you notice them more right now is because you haven't started mowing. So, like, the chickweed, which is, like, taller than the grass right now in most people's lawns, as soon as you put the mower on there and keep it short, it'll start to die out.
Right.
But it's just the fact that most, I'd say 98% of lawns probably haven't been mowed last, you know, as of yet in the season. I passed two or three on the way home last night, just people that, it's like, I could set my clock by, they're going to be the first ones out mowing every season, but they're out there with the little push mowers and bagging, and it looked good when they were finished, but you know, you might as well put it off as long as you can, because once you start, you don't stop until November, December, unless you're just one of those people that just absolutely love to mow your lawn every week. You know, it's not going to do any damage or harm to let it go another week or so until you crank up the old lawn mower.
Right, because once you start, it's, you know, it's almost like, you know, the grass kind of greens up in the early spring.
Right.
Excuse me. It starts to grow a little bit. And then, you know, you put the mower on it and it like kicks it into hyperdrive.
Yeah.
Then it just grows like crazy.
Right.
And then you're mowing as often as you can get out there.
Right.
Just about to keep it under control.
So unless you're just dying, like I said, unless you're just dying to get out there and do it, you know, you could probably hold off another week. We're going to try to push most of our residential and commercial jobs that we maintain till, you know, a week from this Monday to get out and start the process of mowing weekly. But, you know, most places, you know, they're a little scraggly looking, but, you know, nothing tall or, you know, to the point where you're going to be taking off so much grass that you're going to do damage to the, you know, lawn in the long run.
Right. And that's an excellent point. It's not so, you know, it's not getting so tall that it's going to do damage to let it go and. You know, when you have, in other words, when you do have to get out there and cut, you're not going to be taken off so much that it hurts the grass. And it actually is beneficial to the root system and everything to allow it to go ahead and come on and get that initial flush so that it gets started photosynthesizing and gets its metabolism going the way it needs to before you get in there and start wounding it by mowing. And, you know, mowing is something that we take, you know, we don't give a lot of thought to because it's something that you do every week, you know, throughout the season, and it's necessary to keep a lawn looking manicured and well kept. But, you know, it is an injurious process to the turf. It does damage as you cut. You're taking off leaf surface. You're taking off the plant's ability to photosynthesize and feed itself. And if you start doing it too early in the season before things really get going well, you can tax the plant's reserves and you know, do some you know, not long-term serious damage, but set it back a little bit.
So I'm going to help you guys read between the lines. In case you're looking for an excuse to tell your wife, just tell her it's not healthy to cut your lawn this early in the season.
That's right. Want to let it mature just a little
just
bit.
Just another week, sweetie. You know, then it'll be ready.
And if, you know, depending on where you live, you might be able to scratch two out of it.
Yeah, there you go.
A little bit further.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mine won't be ready for probably another 2 weeks at least.
One thing you could do this week, though, is go ahead and get out the lawnmower, open the garage or the little shed or wherever you keep it outside underneath the patio. But go ahead and, you know, look at the blades, take the blade off from last season, get a nice sharp edge on it, change the oil, get the fuel ready, you know, so you don't have to really start it up too much, but you might want to go ahead and do a little maintenance this week just in preparation of the inevitable.
That's right.
Another thing, how about that little gully washer last night?
Yeah.
rain just came out of nowhere.
Yeah, they're talking about, yeah, maybe if, you know, maybe a shower or two, you know, nothing real. And then all of a sudden, it's like the heavens opened up and just dumped.
Yeah, I live just, you know, northern Albemarle, and the rain was just coming sideways, and it was pelting our windows. And first of all, I thought someone was standing outside with a garden hose, like, spraying my window. That's what it sounded like.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd never heard it that loud. And, but, you know, we've seen a significant amount of rain in the last 2 weeks. I think if we totaled it up, we'd be 6-7 inches in some areas.
Yeah.
So now is an excellent time if you've noticed that you have drainage problems in and around your home and your garden, around your foundation, if you have standing water.
If you're getting water in your basement.
Water in your basement. Now is now there's probably not going to be any better indication of if you have drainage and water problems than what we've seen in the last 2 weeks. And the reason I bring that up is that there are solutions that aren't necessarily really expensive solutions. There's some landscape options and drainage options that you can do on the exterior, such as French drains, water aversion, just rerouting and directing the water by the series of swells. Landscape swells, stone swells, but
dealing with where your downspouts dump, making sure that the gutters are clean. It's amazing, you know, when you look at water around the house, water getting into your crawl space or your basement or things like that. You know, the first thing you think about is, oh man, I'm going to have to get the walls waterproof. They're going to dig everything out and do this big extensive project around the house to do it. And a lot of times that's not necessary,
right?
It's amazing how much we can do with just looking at where water flows through the garden, through your lawn, and how to direct that water away from the house, building up a little bit of soil around the foundation to channel that water away. It's amazing how much can be accomplished without ever touching the structure of the house.
Well, that's just it. You know, the majority of homes that are constructed, you know, today and even in the last, you know, 10, 15 years, the majority of them, the downspouts are, you know, the contractor, the builder will include the downspouts, but, you know, they're not terminated, you know, they're terminated right there at the bottom of the house, and they don't, typically, they don't put the pipe on there and carry that water away from the foundation, away from, you know, causing problems for you. So that one of the quickest, easiest, cheapest things, solutions that you can do if you have a water problem is check your downspouts.
Right.
And make sure that water is positively flowing away from your home.
Right.
Hey, we've got to take a quick break. When I come back, I want lots of phone calls, okay? 977-1070 is our number here. You're listening to the Snow Nose Garden Show. We'll be right back.
In the morning, feeling like P. Diddy.
Hey, whatever, girl.
Grab my glasses, I'm out the door. I'm going to hit this city.
Let's
before
go.
I leave, brush my...
And welcome back to the hip-hop version of the Snow Nose Garden Show.
Okay.
I'm Corbin Snow,
Norm Carlson,
the Minister of Mulche, and I've got the Doctor of Dirt to my right, your left, if you're listening in the speaker system. Norm Carlson, we're here to take your gardening questions and answer your phone calls. Our number here live in the studios, just hit us up right now, 977-1070. We've got one caller. Let's fill up the lines. We've got four lines open, so call away. Good morning. You're on the Snow Nose Garden Show.
Good morning. Had a couple questions. 15, 20 years ago, I started a lawn. We have a wooded lot, took down some old scrub trees. And over that 15 or 20 years, it seems like each year more and more moss has kind of taken over the yard.
Yeah.
First of all, I wonder why, and second of all, what to do to prevent it. And the second question I have is I have an old pit behind the house that's not incredibly deep, but there used to be a swimming pool there, and I wondered about putting in a pond, but I wondered, can you put in a pond that doesn't have to have all the filter system and all that and still have it be a viable pond?
Okay. Start with the first question about the moss.
Okay.
You know, in a wooded area like that, yeah, you know, that's something that can happen over time. As the moss starts to, or you get a shady spot like that, and moss starts to encroach over time, particularly if it's an area that tends to stay a little bit moist. But, you know, it doesn't have to stay, you know, when you talk about staying moist. You know, I'm not talking wet. I'm just talking, you know, a little bit moist.
Right. I think our area is more the shade issue than the moisture issue.
Right. And that's, you know, there's basically, you know, there's several factors that contribute to moss development. One is the shade. Two is you know, a moist site. Three is compacted soil that doesn't drain very well. And the fourth thing is low pH. Low pH tends to foster moss development, or moss likes low pH. That's probably a better way to put it.
Okay.
If you've got low pH, those are one of the conditions that moss really likes. One of the things that kind of happens is we fixate on that part of the equation. Well, if I put lime down and get my pH up, it'll eliminate the moss. Well, that doesn't necessarily take care of the problem either. It helps, but if you've still got those other three factors working, even though you get your pH up close to where it needs to be, you can still have moss.
Okay.
So putting lime down, contrary to popular belief, will not eliminate the moss 100%. The other three factors, you got to take those into consideration also. The moisture, you know, you can address that by increasing air circulation through the area, getting, you know, making sure that there's no big screening type shrubs and undergrowth and things like that that impede air from moving through the area. And that will help that, you know, the area to dry out a little bit, which, you know, sounds like for your scenario is not necessarily an issue.
Right. Compacting and the shading is probably more of the issue for us.
Right. So, you know, the compacted soil, the best way to deal with that is to run a core aerator over the soil.
Okay.
And typically we'll do that once a year in conjunction with overseeding and trying to, you know, get more seed growing. If you've got areas with moss and you know, you're dealing with compacted soil, you may want to do it more than once a year.
Yeah.
You may want to get in there, do it as much as two or three times throughout the season, just to help really break that soil up, get some air down in there, and that will help the water to drain through it. It'll help to get air in there, which, again, will help to discourage the moss. In addition to that, it helps the grass grow better,
sure,
which will help to discourage the moss as well.
Sure. Now, let me follow up with the pond question. Any thoughts? I mean, that when a person builds a pond, do you have to have the filtering system, or can you put the plastic in there and just let it be a natural pond, or does it just end up being a cesspool, so to speak?
Yes.
Yes.
the answer to, you know, is yes to all of it.
Okay. All right.
You can have a very successful pond with minimal filtration.
Uh-huh.
The good news. The bad news is you're not going to have crystal clear water in it. So, you know, and is that a problem for fish? Not necessarily. If you're trying to raise koi, you know, the big fancy Japanese fish.
No.
They're not going to like that.
Right. I'm just looking for kind of a natural pond where, you know, the tree frogs and the snakes and the other rodents, whatever, will enjoy that aquatic environment. I mean, it's 7 or 8 feet deep, and it's probably got a diameter of 20 or 30 feet. There used to be an old above ground pool sitting in there, and you know, that got damaged and was taken out, and I'm left with this cavern, so to speak. I thought,
right,
Gee, fill it in. When it rains hard, it fills up about halfway, two-thirds, but then over the next 2 or 3 days, it just drains away.
Right, right. And, you know, my advice would be, you know, that's certainly not a bad idea, to go ahead and, you know, and try and establish kind of a natural pond in that spot.
Right.
I would advise putting some fish in it.
Okay.
Just some regular, just cheap goldfish.
Okay.
Usually pick them up at the pet store. You go in there and get feeder goldfish. They're ones that, you know, that would otherwise go to be some other larger fish's dinner.
Sure, sure.
And, you know, you can get them, they're like, I know, you know, this goes back years ago, but I'm, you know, when I worked at a pet store years ago, we sold them 10 for a dollar.
Oh, okay.
And they're, you know, a little, about an inch long or so, just little itty bitty ones.
Sure. just helps with the balance, the animal life in the pond.
Right, and it will also, you know, particularly if you, you know, if you don't have a lot of moving water in there, it helps to eliminate any mosquito larvae or whatever that could get started in there.
Okay.
It's not something you're going to have to give a lot of care to.
Right.
You know, if you feed them, great. If not, they subsist very well off of the mosquito larvae, insects, algae, and things like that that develop in there. But I would, you know, I would also look at doing something to keep the water moving.
Okay.
Doesn't have to be an elaborate filtration system, but, you know, just put a little, you know, simple water course in there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Something that's going to keep that water moving. That'll help to keep it oxygenated, help keep, you know, reduce some of the, you know, the stagnation that, sure. that can come, you know, eliminate the cesspool effect that, you know, that okay. you were talking about earlier. And like I said, it doesn't have to be an elaborate filtration system, just something to keep the water moving. And that'll also help to attract the wildlife and things like that to the pond. Get some of that moving water in there. The sound of it will attract the birds and the frogs and all of that and, you know, kind of create that aquatic ecosystem that you want. And, you know, you can incorporate some water plants and things like that in there. And it's possible. It's not easy, but it's possible to balance that ecosystem out so that you can get relatively clear water without a big elaborate filtration system. But it's not easy.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate it.
Hey, oh, thank you.
Thanks for calling. Good questions.
Have a great day. If you'd like to join the show, we just have a couple minutes before the bottom of the hour. We have to break for news. Our number is 977-1070.
Yeah, great question. You know, there's all kinds of things that you can do to kind of take advantage of some of the varied terrain that we've got in this area and you know, turn some of these what might be considered a landscape liability into an asset by creating, you know, a nice little habitat area within the garden. And it, you know, it doesn't have to be real expensive, doesn't have to be real technical and elaborate.
I was a little confused on his question. Did he have a liner still in the pool?
Or is no.
Okay.
No, it sounded like
so it sounded like the water's draining pretty rapidly though.
Right. So, you know, to create that, you know, that kind of environment, you would have to come in and put a liner in. And again, you probably want to fill it in to some extent, you know, so that you don't have a real deep
right.
hole in there, because then you run into some code issues with fencing
right.
and all of that. So you do want to be careful about the size that you know the depth that you put on there. And most, you know, ornamental ponds to create that kind of atmosphere mm-hmm. don't need to be any deeper than about 2 feet.
Right.
And, you know, that gets you down below the freeze line for any plants or fish or anything like that that you want to put in there.
And it's still deep enough. If you want to jump in there and cool off on a hot summer day, you can do it.
You might not want to jump in, but maybe, you know, kind of wade in and sit down.
I'll never forget it. The little pond we have in the back of the nursery, we had some employees one weekend, and this is years ago. And our pond at the garden center is maybe, you know, 20 by 10 and 2 or 3 feet deep. And I came over there on the weekend, and there's one of our employees on a raft, you know, on a little float, sunbathing. So, yeah, you can still get some recreation use out of those little backyard fountains and ponds, but not highly recommended.
No.
that might throw that eco balance off a little bit. You're listening to the Snow Nose Garden Show. We've got to take a quick break. We'll be right back after the news. Welcome back to the Snow Nose Garden Show, the longest continuously running garden show in the world. We are live each and every Saturday morning, and we have been so since the spring of 1950. We are in our 61st season, and we are stronger and more knowledgeable than ever. We put the other generations to shame, don't we, Norman?
It all just builds. It builds on itself. You know, each generation learns a little bit more. You know, you get the information.
We have Google.
Down
they didn't have Google back
that's
then.
That's true. That's true.
That's where the majority of my information and knowledge comes from. If I don't know something, I'm not kidding you. I'll be on the phone. That's one of the nice things. When people call into the garden center and they have a question, and we get some unusual, you know, very specific, unusual questions. And,
I could tell you some unusual questions we've had.
And
over
I
the
love,
years.
Yeah, and so like when I can tell it's gonna start to, you know, go down that road to the unusual, I always just quietly, you know, get my mouse out and pull up Google, and then I start typing away and enter. And before you know it, man, I'm rattling off some awesome answers, and people are just blown away by my knowledge.
Well, sometimes, you know, comes in, you know, it's indispensable being able to have some of those kind of resources and everything.
Oh,
because,
yeah.
You know, we'll get somebody calls up and says, you know, do you have such and such a plant?
Yeah.
Or like, you know, and it's
well, and so often they use like this common name or the name like their grandma, you know, call the shrub the certain name. It's like,
exactly.
I've never even heard of that.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's a, there's so many, you know, common names and
right.
things like that that are very regional.
Yeah.
Or, you know, sometimes generational and, you know, it's, what in the world is that?
Yeah.
You type it in and it comes back and, oh, that.
Yeah,
I know what
that
is.
Exactly.
Okay, just never heard it called that before.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a big help when you get some of the, you know, some of the but more obscure stuff.
There is no computer here in our presence. I mean, this is just pure, unadulterated talent you're listening to, folks. I'm just kidding. Our number here, if you'd like to put our minds to the test. 977-1070. The phone lines are still wide open. I think everyone's still recovering from St. Patrick's Day or something. We went out to dinner last night, and we went to McGrady's Irish Pub over there, just, you know, right down the road. And I'd never been there before. And it's like St. Patty's Day, like 365 in there. I mean, there's like banners up, and, you know, everyone's wearing green. I mean, I know it's St. Patty's week still. But, you know, it was just a fun, different atmosphere. And the food was really good, too, by the way.
Good. I haven't ever been there either.
But. Had fried Oreos for the first time and last time.
Man.
Fried Oreos. We were done dinner. I was like, Jill, I was like, should we try them? She's like, yeah, let's try them. And so they came out. They were coated in, you know, deep fried, you know, in the batter. And the Oreo in the heating process, it just all melts inside. And so the white cream is like almost like looks like cheese. And, you know, when you pull it apart, it was actually really good. And they put powdered sugar on it just to give it a little extra sugar, you know, which it needed.
Yeah.
After it was deep fried.
We're going to have the cardiologist calling up here.
Oh, my gosh.
Awesome.
Serious. No wonder I'm feeling kind of bad this morning.
Yeah.
I just put it together, folks. Oh, geez. If you'd like to join the show,
once in a while.
977-1070.
It's like we, the, you know, our middle son actually had some issues related to his heart back. He had some surgery about 6 months ago and everything. And there's some things that, you know, that he has to keep an eye on and everything now, and you know, every now and again he gets kind of bummed out. And he said, you know, once in a while,
yeah,
a little something is not going to hurt. You just need to, you know, moderation and be aware that you can't live on that stuff.
Right.
But,
I mean,
you know,
I can't
just a little snack
yeah,
every now
so
and again.
I did some good clogging of the arteries last night. Cheese fries for an appetizer.
Oh my gosh.
Cheese steak for dinner with onion rings, followed up with the deep fried Oreos.
I think that crosses the moderation threshold.
Yeah. But I mean, that's like once in like a. I mean, that's like once in a lifetime, man.
Yeah.
And they didn't have deep fried pickles, which we asked for. That's like the staple. I love that. All right, so let's get back to gardening. There's nothing deep fried out in the garden yet.
Yet.
Although it's vegetable season, it's time to start preparing and making plans and laying out the garden. And one of my most favorite things is breaking out that rototiller and getting dirty in the garden. You know, just really building your soil, bringing in some compost or bumper crop, getting your soil set so that you can have a successful garden. And it all starts with the soil.
That's right. And, you know, we talk about breaking out the rototiller and things like that, but if you don't have a really large area.
Oh, no, you don't.
Excuse me. Get my sneeze in for
bless you.
Something in here.
It's me, but, Norman.
But you know, if you've got a really large area, when I was a kid, we had a very productive, eventually had a very productive vegetable garden in our backyard. We had everything in our backyard. We had, and this is an 80-by-100-foot lot.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very sandy soil. I mean, it was essentially beach sand for soil. It was terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And it was almost worse. It was easier to work with,
yeah,
easier to dig in, but not any more productive than here. In fact, the trees, we've got the same kinds of trees that we have here, but they were only about half the size of the ones that, you know, that you see around Charlottesville. The same varieties of trees,
yeah,
but they'd only grow half as big because the soil was so nutrient poor and didn't have the wherewithal to hold any of it. But, you know, on an 80-by-100-foot lot in our backyard, we grew raspberries, we had blueberries, I grew corn, lettuce, tomatoes, beans, onions, broccoli, cauliflower. Oh, what all else? Zucchini, yellow squash, cucumbers, a bunch of other stuff. I don't even remember that.
You know, when we think about gardening, people think you got to live out in the country. You've got to, you know, have acres and acres of land to do it.
Right.
But, most successful gardens are just little, you know, 8x12s in your backyard.
That's right. And we didn't ever I never used a rototiller.
Yeah.
And the whole time we were doing it, the whole time I was growing up, we didn't own a rototiller, didn't need a rototiller.
Yeah, and if you're not afraid to break out a shovel and you know, do a little bit of manual labor, then you know you don't need a rototiller for a small area.
Right. Me and my brother would get out there, just spread the organic matter, mm-hmm, out over the top of the soil, and you know, get it a few inches deep, and then just dig down with the shovel. Take a shovel full of earth out, flip it over, and drop it back in the hole, and then just go down, and you just work down a line.
Yeah.
Doing that, just dig it up, drop it over, dig it up, drop it over, dig it up, drop it over. And you'd be amazed at how much of an area you can cover in a pretty short amount of time. Now, the first season, it's going to be, you know, it may be fairly difficult to do,
right,
because you got, you know, the soil is going to be fairly hard. It's going to be fairly compacted. You're going to have to do some, you know, some real work to, mm-hmm, to dig down in there, especially if you're in an area like me with a lot of tree roots.
Right.
But as you work the soil, you know, over a couple of seasons, it'll become very, very easy to do after a while. You almost get to the point where you don't need to.
And talk about sustainable landscapes. One of the really hot trends right now is having your vegetable gardens right in your landscaping beds. In fact, last year, was the first year we did it. We took out all the foundation shrubs against our house in the backyard where my neighbors can't see them, where no one really sees them. And we put blueberries in and strawberries, and you know, we just planted them like you'd plant a holly bush or shrub, or mm-hmm, you know, and we just planted them right along the foundation, and we mixed in some bumper crop when we planted them, and you know, watered them in like real good last year. Didn't you know first year or two you're not going to get much you know, fruit off of them, but you know, this year already they're greening up, they're looking good, leaves are coming on them, and you know, we might get a little bit of something off of them this year.
Yeah.
And that's something you can do just right in your landscape beds.
Right. And even with, with vegetables and things like that, I don't know if some of you may have noticed, may remember back last fall in the beds that we had right outside the back of the garden center, mm-hmm, right in amongst all of the ornamentals and everything, we planted a variety of different types of lettuce.
Mm-hmm.
We had some red sails and some buttercrunch, and some of the leaf lettuces worked right in as bedding plants, as ornamental plants right in the landscape there. And it was beautiful. I mean,
yeah,
they have a tremendous amount of ornamental value that we overlook. You know, obviously, you know, a tomato plant is not really going to fall into that category, maybe. But, you know, it's amazing what you can incorporate right into your flower beds and into the shrub borders that actually take on a very, very ornamental character, and you can eat it.
Right. We've got to take a quick break. You're listening to the Snow Nose Garden Show. We'll be right back. And welcome back to the Snow Nose Garden Show. We're continuing our hip-hop theme this morning, folks. It's a hip-hop music that's going to get your blood flowing and get that vibe out in the garden when you get out and start working it and tilling it and doing all that stuff you got to do outside today. Speaking of gardens, the Garden Center is bursting at the seams. She is not fully stocked, but she's on her way there.
Yep.
We've got annuals and perennials, fresh shipments that just arrived yesterday.
Herbs. Great selection of herbs.
Wonderful selection of herbs. And there's nothing better than the fresh herbs in the spring.
No.
I love walking through the herb section and just kind of taking some pinches and sniffs and, you know, sneaking a little, you know, stealing a couple of leaves and just popping them in my mouth as I walk through the nursery. And it's just a wonderful time of year. The foliage is coming on the trees on Carter's Mountain that we back up to, and fresh arrival of shrubs and new products in the garden center. We've got a kids' corner, kids' gardening corner, that you can bring your children out. And our new Red Flyer knockoff wagons that you can throw the kids in and take them around the nursery. We've expanded the garden center. If you recall, the garden center, the paths and the trails used to end right around the pond, and now the paths extend back around the pond, back into the selection of trees. And we've taken about a month worth of labor, and we've reworked and relaid out the entire nursery, and it looks absolutely beautiful, and it's much more accommodating to fit all the plants and trees and shrubs that we have, and it's very shoppable, and our signage is out that gives you good explanations of each shrub, how things grow, when they bloom, how tall are they going to get, just a good character, all the characteristics of each shrub or tree are listed on the signs. Just lots of good information, lots of opportunities to learn as you come out to Snow's Garden Center. We've got an excellent staff of people willing and able to help you as well. Let's go to the phone lines. Good morning.
Hello.
Thank you for holding. You're on the Snow Nose Garden Show.
Thank you. Yes. I just have a question. I have some daffodils, a big clump of daffodils that have been at the house since I moved here, which is about 6 years ago, and they've never bloomed. Would it help if I were to transplant those?
It would. Well, before you do that, though, what I would advise you to do is this going to be something to work on over the next 6 to 8 weeks or so to get these really ready to be more productive and give you some good spring color. First of all, what I would do is go out there right now and fertilize them with a good balanced fertilizer. One of the things that, you know, that we often overlook is fertilizing our bulbs. We put them in, you know, put some bone meal or something down in the hole when we plant them, but then don't necessarily give them a lot of thought after that as far as fertilizing. And that will help get them ready, make sure that they store up as much nutrient and everything as they can going through the season to help build that bulb for next year, because everything that is going to produce for next season is being developed in the soil right now. As those plants continue to grow, you know, they send up their flowers and everything right now along with the foliage, and once that flower fades, that foliage really kicks into overdrive building next year's plant. And the more you can do to nourish that foliage and nourish that plant now, the better it's going to be able to work and build for next season. So go ahead and fertilize it real well. And then as soon as those leaves start to really die back, when they turn brown and fall over and really, you know, are looking raggedy in, you know, late May, early June, that's going to be the time to get in there, dig those up, divide them, and space them out. One of the things that happens with daffodils is over time, they can get overcrowded in a particular spot and they'll stop flowering. So get in there, transplant them, get them into an area where maybe they get a little bit more sunlight if the area they're in is a little shady, and just space them out, give them some elbow room, and again, work some organic matter in into the bottom of the hole as you're planting. Fertilize them again with some good slow release fertilizer, like, you know, bulb food or bone meal works very, very well, you know, down there in the bottom of the hole, and that will help to get them on their way to being productive again for you.
Well, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Right,
bye-bye. Bye-bye.
That reminds me of our Facebook page. We have a new little series that we started this past week. It's called the Tuesday Afternoon Conundrum. And the question this week was, daffodils, jonquils, or narcissus? What's the difference? Why have three different names for what looks like the same flower? Snow knows, do you? And that's on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Snow's Garden Center. Each week we'll have a little trivia question for you. And the winner of the question, which always we're not always looking for the right answer, although that would be a good thing to get. But any creative answers that you might have are accepted. And that's the question. The standing question we have right now is the difference between those two variety species of bulbs. And if you'd like to answer that question, you can like us on Facebook and be eligible to win a $10 gift card to Snow's. And this we'll keep the question open until Monday afternoon, where we will announce the winner of the previous week. And this will be each and every week your opportunity. All you have to do is follow us on Facebook, give us a like on Facebook, and then answer the question that we'll post every Tuesday afternoon. Again, that's facebook.com/Snow's Garden Center. Also, just wanted to remind listeners that we have the first annual Go Green Festival, which is going to be held at Snow's Garden Center May 17th, I believe. Sorry, I didn't have my calendar out in front of me. I haven't memorized the date. It is May 14th is the first ever Seville Go Green Festival at Snow's Garden Center, in conjunction with our community partner Dixon Disposal. We also have Brown's Auto that'll be joining us to host that festival on the 14th of May. If you are a local green business or green-minded business and you'd like to join us, you can email or call the Garden Center to get more information on that festival. There is no charge to participate. We just ask that you come with information about things that your business does to be green, and things that your others can do as well. And again, we have a website that we have set up for that at SevilleGoGreenFest.com. You can also follow us. We have a blog as well that you can follow from that website. Again, that's Snow's Garden Center, Dixon Disposal, and Brown's Auto. I'd like to thank our community partners for helping sponsor and put this great event together. It's going to really be a spectacular, fun day. We're going to have games and food and different businesses there promoting green products, and really neat and new green products and services. And again, if you'd like to get involved or be a part of that, contact me at this Garden Center at 295-2159.
It's going to be a great opportunity to come out there and get some good information on things that you can do to make a good positive impact on the environment, reduce the negative impacts that you have on the environment that are practical and doable things. You know, there's lots of buzz about being green. We're going to help you get some information kind of condensed down into one place on things that you can do, good practical solutions.
And there's nothing more green than planting a tree or shrub. So come out to the Garden Center today. We've got a beautiful selection of trees, shrubs, herbs, vegetables, annuals, perennials. So much is happening out at the Garden Center today. We'd love to have you there. It's going to be a beautiful day to get out and plant and do things in your garden.
And there's nothing greener than getting a good vegetable garden started in your own yard with your family. You know what's going in it. You can produce some of the best tasting produce that you've ever had. It's easy to do. We'll help you out with every step of the way.
It's funny, I was having a conversation with the Daily Progress earlier in the week, And we started talking about the organic trend in the garden. And I talked about how our section in the garden center has grown from this little two or three shelf section of organic green items, and it's expanded the entire length of a wall.
Right.
And so this trend is here to say. It's sustainable. It's a great thing to do. Come out, snownose.com. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next week on the Snow Nose Garden Show.